Mitzvah 373, Shin Ayin Gimel, continuing, we're towards the end actually, but we're talking about the fact that a Nazir is allowed to do what's called Chofef and Mefaspes, but not comb his hair. So he's, in other words, he's allowed to rub his hair, shampoo his hair perhaps, scratch it with nails, but he's not allowed to use a comb. He's not allowed to comb his hair, yeah?
So every day is Shabbos for him, then, regarding his hair, you know,
right? Oh, he can wash his hair.
Right.
But in terms of the combing...
Same sort of idea, right? You can't do anything.
And he's also not allowed to use a type of shampoo that is known to cause hair to fall out.
Well, most people don't want to do that.
Right. So most people don't want to do that, but some people, again, if the Nazir is getting very desperate... And he feels that his hair is getting too long, so he might go to the store, you know, give me a shampoo that makes my hair fall out. I can't take it already. You know, at least some of it, thin it out a little bit. So that he's not allowed to do. Because there's a concept in halacha that we're mostly familiar with nowadays from Hilchos Shabbos, which is the difference between a psik resha and a davar she'eno miskavim. So what is that? What does that mean? So a psik resha is... a term that's borrowed from the idea that let's say you have on Shabbos a bird. Mm-hmm. And
bird?
Your kid, a bird.
Yeah, a chicken.
And your kid says, I would like to have a ball to play with. Ball to play with. You have your chicken. And the chicken's head seems to you to be in a perfectly nice toy that your kid could play with.
Kids used to play with them.
Yeah, they didn't have plastic balls. They didn't have plastic balls that you could buy in the store.
Shut the kid up. Here's a chicken head to play with.
Right. Right. So they didn't have all these fancy toys you could go to Toys R Us and buy. And so he said, okay, so, you know, we have lots of chickens. Maybe we don't need to eat this one. Okay, so I'm going to cut you off the head of the chicken, and you can kick it around in the dirt and play, like, soccer with the head of the chicken. So it's Shabbos. So what's the... Yeah, chicken is not supposed to be cruel to animals, but human needs come first. And if your kid needs a toy, and the only option you have... The only option you have is a chicken head, so... So, are you allowed to cut off the head of the chicken on Shabbos or not?
No, because it's certain the chicken is going to die.
Correct. So you could say, hey, wait a minute.
You're talking about a live chicken.
A live chicken, yeah. A live chicken. So you say, hey, but on Shabbos, you need meleches machsheves. Meaning part of the point of melecha of Shabbos is that you need it needs to be thought of. It needs to be something that's done on purpose. So the melecha here is not cutting off the chicken's head. The melecha is killing the chicken. That's a violation of the melecha of Shochet. You're not allowed to kill any living thing on Shabbos. So you say, hey, there's no meleches machsheves for Shochet over here for killing the chicken. All I want is the head. So let me cut off the head. No, because it says, Psik Resha Velo Yamus. You're going to cut off its head and it won't die. Since it's something that is intrinsically going to happen when you cut off the head, it's certainly going to happen. It's inevitable. So that's still considered a violation of Shabbos. There is something, by the way, that is called a Psik Resha Delo Nichale. That if there's something that's inevitably going to result from one action, but you don't have any interest in that action, and you, there's a difference according to some authorities, if you don't want, you just have no interest in it, or specifically don't want it to happen. So if there's a psik resha that you specifically do not want to happen, then that is considered not a violation of meleches machsheves. It's not, it doesn't have anything to do with your intention. So therefore, that might be allowed on Shabbos. We normally paskin, the Arshi Rishonim, I think it's in there, said in the name of the Aruch, that the Aruch holds that a psik resha delo nichale, that if there's a psik resha that you're not interested in at all, then that is allowed on Shabbos, even if the result in melacha is a melacha deraisa. But let's say it's, completely light outside, it's daytime, and you're walking by an electric sensor that's going to turn on a light. So
it's not yours, it's in a public
somebody else.
No, anyone, because in a light, if it's daytime, you don't want this. You really don't want to waste electricity. You don't care at all.
Somebody else's electricity. Yeah.
Right, whatever it is. But you don't care at all whether this light turns on or not. So if it's nighttime, so you're not allowed to walk by the electric light sensor. Again, there are hetera if you can't get home. You know, without you close your eyes, there are ways to get around it. But I'm saying, certainly in the daytime, According to that approach, you would be allowed to walk by the lights, the sensor that would turn on an electric light, because that's a psik resha de lo nichale, that you're walking, you're not actively turning on the light. It's just a inevitable result of ancillary result of your action. You have absolutely no interest. You don't want the light to turn on at all. That would be a psik resha de lo nichale. According to the Aruch, that would be allowed. So the normative psak is that psik resha de lo nichale is only allowed if the result will be an iser de rabbanon and not an iser de raisa.
Now, yeah. I assume that we're discussing this because these principles go beyond Hilchos Shabbos.
Correct. Yeah. So that's the psik resha. There's a psik resha de nichale and a psik resha de lo nichale. A psik resha that you want the resultant action and a psik resha that you don't want the resultant action. So there's also something that's called davar she'eno miskaven. That if there's something that may or may not result from your action, that you're not sure, you don't intend for that to happen, and it might not necessarily happen, that's called a davar she'eno miskaven, that's called something that you have no intention for it to happen, and that is mutter. That's a famous case in the Gemara. It says, Gorer adam mita kisei v'safsal v'vavadjali iskaven lasos chritz. That you're allowed to drag a bench outside on Shabbos in a dirt area. So normally you're not allowed to make a furrow in the ground on Shabbos because of the prohibition of plowing. But you're allowed. So if you drag a bench across a field on Shabbos, so it may or may not.
You're allowed to carry.
Right. Yeah. So you may or may not dig up the field. Out. You may or may not dig up the field. And you have no interest in digging up the field, so therefore that's called a davar she'eino miskaven, and that's mutter. So these are very important principles to keep in mind on Shabbos. That if there's something that is not necessarily going to result, and you don't have any interest in it resulting, then that is allowed on Shabbos, even if the resultant act, if it does happen, would be an iser deraisa. So the same principles apply in halacha in general. So that's why over here the Sefer Chinuch tells us that a nazir is allowed to wash his hair, to rub his hair, to scratch his hair, because hair is not necessarily going to fall out. But he's not allowed to comb his hair, because when you comb your hair, that is absolutely right. That is absolutely going to happen. That hair is going to be plucked out, which is why. That at least with old combs, I don't know how it is with combs nowadays.
I sort of suspect if you really look into it, you find that all it's doing is, you know, the hairs that are already attached are getting removed.
Well,
but, you know, I don't think it's actually pulling anything out. You know?
I think
if you look at a comb,
if you look at it,
if you look at it, I mean, well,
I know that, but those hairs though are ones which are, you know,
except that there are knots. I believe that in the olden days, so a reason women used to comb their hair a lot was not just to smooth it out, but to get knots out, and they would want to, because those hairs weren't attractive, so they just assumed not have those hairs in their heads at all. So they used to take the comb, and they used to want the hairs to be pulled out, which is why, classically in halacha, combing one's hair on Shabbos is considered a psik resha de nichale. Mm-hmm. That's a psik resha that you want to happen, because combing is necessarily going to pull out the hair, and you want it to pull out the hair. Whereas, a soft brush is for sure allowed.
Which is miyuchad for Shabbos and so on.
Well, a soft brush is allowed because it doesn't necessarily pull out hairs. It's just to smooth out the hair. So if you yes, that would certainly be allowed on Shabbos. Okay. Well, inyan mi b'mi noheges of ezes man vonish over alea kol kedin shar mitzvos hanazir shekasavnu. So this is all like the rest of the mitzvahs of the nazir that we explained already. Mikol mako mishavar kan shim gileach afilu sarah achas yischayev malkus aleha uchmosh amru benazir perek shloshim minim amru avchista lulkos beachas laake b'shtayim kolomer shekilo kiem mitzvos asei de giluach kozman shenishtayru berosho shtei sarahs. So if the nazir would receive the penalty of malkus even if he pulled out or shaved off one hair of his head. He's not allowed to pull out even one hair, but you only receive malchus if you cut it with a scissors or a razor. And at the end of the Naziris period, as we're going to see, the Nazir has to cut off all of his hair. So if he leaves two hairs that are not cut off, then that would be not a fulfillment of the requirement that he shave his head. Listor eno sosar ela berov rosho. But there's another concept that we're going to learn about in, I think, three or four mitzvahs from now, which is that if the Nazir makes a mistake and he violates the prohibition to cut down the hairs of his head or comes into contact with a dead body, so then he has to start his Nazirus all over again. So say he was planned to be a Nazir, he vowed to be a Nazir for 60 days. So, and he violated this after only 20 days. So that means you have to wait 30 days for your hair to start growing back, and then you start the 60 days all over again.
Now, is there a minimum period of time for Nazirus?
30 days.
Oh, okay. Right.
The standard Nazirus is 30 days, yeah.
I can't say I'm going to be in a Nazir until 10 o'clock.
Right, so I believe it says that if you say such a thing, then you automatically become a Nazir for 30 days.
Ah, oh, well.
Oh. So don't...
kids at camp with the harayat.
Yeah, right.
Don't fool around with it. That's I have to be extra careful. Okay, so but you do not restart the count until you shave most of your head. So you could, you'll get Malkus. You could get lots of Malkus by cutting down the hair on the minority of the head, but you won't restart the count until you cut most of your head. Kilomar eino soser cheshvon yemein Israel imken gileach rov rosho, aval gileach miuto afavi sh'avar alav detar lo yavar al rosho, eino soser cheshvon hayamim b'chach. Again, you violated the commandment, but you won't restart the count. It applies to males and females, all places and all times. So again, if you accept Nazirus nowadays, you're not allowed to cut even one hair. So no, we don't really hear about too many Nazirim nowadays, with the exception of, who is a Nazir?
David Cohen?
Yes. Who? Rabbi David Cohen, who was the father-in-law of Rabbi Gorin. The chief rabbi of Israel in the 80s, I believe. And he was also the father of Rabbi Shar Yashuv Cohen, who was the chief rabbi of Haifa. So he was also a vegetarian, by the way. He liked to accept additional restrictions on himself that weren't halachically required.
We're going to get to this issue of why would anyone do this kind of thing.
That's the next mitzvah, yeah.
Okay.
The bigger question is, why would anyone be a vegetarian? Rav Kook was not a vegetarian.
It was hard to come by kosher meat, in those days.
Rav Kook was, he wrote in one of his books, maybe, when Mashiach comes and the ideal state of humanity will be... put into place so people would be vegetarians, but he didn't. I don't believe he was personally a vegetarian.
I have something that he was very sympathetic to it, obviously, and he may have done it to some degree, but he would eat like whatever it was, chicken on Shabbos.
Chicken on
Shabbos.
Heard once or twice.
Idolatry out of it, or
right. I heard once or twice in the name of the Vilna Gaon. I don't think I saw it in any of the canonical records of the practices of the Vilna Gaon. Baruch Schefter said over, and I think I saw it in one other place, that the Vilna Gaon's personal practice is he would only eat meat on days where you don't say Tachanun.
Oh, that's interesting.
Right. Okay.
The idea being, it's some sort of geder that he's trying to reduce the consumption of meat. You want to make sure that it's only for a special occasion as opposed to daily fare.
In those days, how much meat did people have anyway?
They didn't eat a lot of it.
You didn't have so much meat. That's true. That's true. So maybe that's the shot. Maybe you just kept it for days where you don't see that.
There's no Dougie's barbecue,
And it's probably chicken anyway that we're talking about.
Right.
So a lot of people... Yeah, so right. A lot of people in the olden days used to eat meat only on Yontif. Yeah, I mean, behemoth flesh, as opposed to poultry. The overall zev v'gileach afilu saira achas chayiv malchus. And if you violate this and you cut even one hair with a scissors or a razor, then you are liable to the penalty of malchus. Mitzvah Shinayin Daled, Mitzvah 374, Mitzvah Zgidul Se'ar Nazir, the Mitzvah of growing the hair of a Nazir. And in the Sefer HaChinuch's original order, this was the first mention of Nazir. So now he's going to give us the whole introduction of why would anyone want to be a Nazir and what the whole story is. Shinayin HaNazir, V'hu Adam Shehifrish Atzma Min Hayayin, so this is someone who separated himself from wine. L'gadel Se'ar Rosho Kol Yemei Hayziro Lashem, that he has to grow his hair all the days that he had the Nazirus vow apply. Shneimar Gadel Pera Se'arosho, that he grows wildly the hair of his head. Lashon mechilta gadil para mitzvah sasei. This is a positive commandment. Uminayin below sasei. I don't know, you're subject to a negative commandment as well. Tamalomar ta'ar lo yavur al rosho. It says a razor shall not come upon his head. So you're not allowed to. So there's a positive commandment and a negative commandment. Mishor shea mitzvah. Oh, what are the reasoning? What's the reasoning behind this mitzvah? Hakdama. An introduction. Ooh, this is going to be long. This doesn't usually tell us explicitly. Introduction. Okay. Now he's giving us, telling us he's giving an introduction. That we humans have a unique status within creation, which is that we're combined of material and intellectual parts. So really, we should be as focused as much as possible on knowing God. That's our point in life, that we should get as close as possible to understanding what God and His wisdom is all about. Bal hataivos vachatoim roya elasichleinu lamod l'sharis lifnei boru l'akir kvodu kachol mei alokim hanitzavim alav. That if it weren't for this body, this material aspect of our existence, the human intellect should be on the level that it's almost like an angel, that it should be able to just purely serve God and be on the level of knowing God, almost on the level of the angels. But because we have this obligation to our bodies, our material, physical existence, Lishkon Bate Chomer, I believe, is a quote from Eov. So sometimes, unfortunately, the human existence is that we have to focus on our bodily needs as well. That we can't just focus on our intellectual requirements. Kilo yiskayim binyan habayis, eitza v'avana v'isodosa mibilti shiashgiach adam olav. So if you're building a house, which is a purely physical thing, so if you don't make sure that the wood and the stones and the foundations are all in good condition, so the house is going to fall. It needs maintenance. So too does the human body require maintenance. So you should see from this that sometimes the best thing for human beings is to focus entirely on the intellectual aspects of his or her existence as opposed to the physical aspects, to completely denigrate and ignore the physical aspects. So, to the extent that your body could tolerate it. Obviously, if you just say, oh, I'm like Moshe Rabbeinu, like when he went to get the luchos, so I'm not going to eat and drink for 40 days, and I'm just going to, you know, commune with God. So you'll go into a room and they'll pull you out as a corpse 40 days later. Okay, that's not gonna work too well. So you have to, even someone who's on the most intellectually focused level has to take some care of the physical plant. But the idea is that sometimes it's good to as much as possible minimize. There's also a sin. Ignoring one's bodily needs is a sin because God created human beings with physical and intellectual components. So if you neglect the physical components, you're saying, hey, basically, God, you know, we don't need this. Why'd you do this? Why'd you create me like this? You know, yeah, exactly. So you have to take care of your body as well. That an individual should not be too ascetic and to afflict himself with fasting too much. That a person will, it says in the beginning of the Torah, that the human being shall be a living being. Amra Torah, neshama shenasati bach, hachayei. Then you have to keep alive the soul that I gave within you. You have to take care of it. Don't be too righteous. You shouldn't be too wise, because otherwise you'll be destroyed. Okay. So you've already established that sometimes it's good to push yourself to a little bit to the extreme of not taking care of one's body, but on the other hand, one cannot completely neglect the body. Yeah,
I'm sure we could get to it, but anyway, what do you do if you're nazir on yontif, where, you know, ein simcha levasal yayin?
You don't drink wine.
All right, but then you're on simcha. Then you know.
Drink
meat?
Whiskey.
Huh? Meat? You could eat meat still.
All right. No.
Okay. I mean, okay, the ikar simcha on yontif nowadays is wine. And not meat. Meat was really in the times of the Beis HaMikdash. We just eat meat nowadays in Yontif as a reminiscence of the Beis HaMikdash. Yeah.
Oh, wait, is that true? I didn't know that.
Yeah, the main simcha in Yontif is wine.
Oh, party on.
Well, that's in the Gemara, right? The saying about the wine and the meat.
The Gemara says in Maseches Psachim that in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, ein simcha ela babasar, meaning the meat of the karbonos that were eaten on Yontif. And nowadays, ein simcha ela bayayin. Nowadays, the simcha on Yontif is really wine. So that's why people ask on the Rambam, that the Rambam paskins, that even nowadays on Yontif, you have to eat meat and drink wine.
Nowadays being in his time.
Well, this is, halakhically, it's the same time now as it was in the times of the Rambam, meaning vis-a-vis the Beis HaMikdash.
Oh, well.
Doesn't mean there's a difference in the 1200s versus the 21st century. But the, so people ask on that. The Beis Yosef asks on that. And the Shulchan Aruch, it only says you have to eat, drink wine on Yontif and not eat meat.
Oh, that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch?
Yeah, but the later Acharonim say that the Ramah doesn't mention it, I don't think. If not mistaken.
So he agrees. I mean,
right, yeah. But the later Acharonim say that it's proper to fulfill the opinion of the Rambam that the meat on Yontif. Also, because everybody agrees it's a Kiyum Simcha if you enjoy it. But that's the idea, that that's the heter nowadays if you're a vegetarian, so you're not required to eat meat on Yontif per se. A woman, again, this technically doesn't apply to a woman because it says that a woman's joy on Yontif is getting new clothes and jewelry.
No, books.
But, or books, okay. Whatever, getting new stuff, fine. But it really only applies to a man. Of course, if a woman enjoys meat and wine, so she's more than welcome, that's an optional part of the Simchas Yontif. So really, if there's an objective requirement at all, it only applies to a man, but... that's why vegetarians can rely on the Shulchan Aruch. Right. So that's why vegetarians can rely on the Shulchan Aruch. They only have to drink wine on Yontif.
Oh, interesting.
You don't have to eat meat at all, but for people who do eat meat, so it's proper to have meat on Yontif in fulfillment of the opinion of the Rambam, because most people enjoy eating it anyway. So for sure it's a good thing to do on Yontif. But that's the Limud Zchus for people who have all milchiks on Shavuos.
Yeah.
Again, exactly. I have a whole shiur about that, but okay. So again, it's not ideal, but that is the Limud Zchus for the justification for people who have only dairy meals on Shavuos.
You should always eat the dairy first and then...
Right, that's what the Rama says to do in Shulchan Aruch. You have the milchiks first and the fleshiks. Okay. But so clearly, there are different streams of thought within Judaism historically in terms of asceticism. The how ascetic are we going to be? Different great religious authorities have pushed different approaches to really trying to minimize earthly pleasures and not trying to minimize earthly pleasures, but trying to enjoy in a religiously positive way. I remember one of my first encounters this when I was a little kid. I was reading the art scroll biography of Moshe Feinstein, and it said in that book that someone once reported to Moshe was telling stories of a great tzaddik that I didn't name, a really, really great tzaddik, said he used to, when his food was served to him, no matter how hot it was, if his wife just pulled it off of the stove, he used to put a spoonful straight in his mouth and swallow without chewing so as to minimize deriving pleasure from the world. So it said in the book that Moshe Feinstein refused to believe that story, that that's totally ridiculous. How could anybody do that? But of course, it probably was true. I don't recommend... Look, if this tzaddik would have come to me and said, you know, what should I do this, I probably would have told him no, but there is that. And again, obviously, this is a crazy extreme case that nobody should really be doing. But in his mind, you know, there was some fulfillment to this idea of trying to minimize earthly pleasures as much as possible.
Wait, there's that whole business about, who was it who said, my hands, and not, he held up his hands and he said, my hands have not derived any joy from the physical world, God.
Don't
try this at home.
Definitely don't try this at home. So
it's
famously,
like throwing a gift back in God's face. I mean,
right. So the
so
famously, there's a story about the Vilna Gaon. That the Vilna Gaon was not particularly ascetic. They say that he ate and drank normally, and so. I think there was a story, and again, how anybody knows this, I don't know, but that someone came to Vilna, saw the this famous huge tzaddik, the Vilna Gaon, and didn't see anything particularly ascetic about him. So he said to the, he had a dream where he was talking to Malachim. So the angel is this person who witnessed the Vilna Gaon says, "What is this? You know, he's supposed to be the most religious person alive nowadays, and he doesn't fast extra and derive he doesn't deprive himself of earthly pleasures." So the Malachim answered to him, "He's so holy that when he eats, it's as if it's a korban." That's everything. Everything he does is spiritual. Even if he seems to be, having earthly pleasures, really it's a manifestation of serving God as well.
Good, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know,
they smelled good. They tasted good. Yeah, sure.
Right.
Yeah, but that's after. God also enjoys some nice meat sometimes. So you see that's the idea. That yeah. Okay.
It's curious enough, by the way.
Ve'ezohi kedushas hanazir ma'aloso ba'nicho meleches achomer ve'yishbor ta'avosa b'ma'she'eno chorban gomor el habayis. So the reason that a nazir is considered to be on a higher spiritual plane is because he's deprived himself a little bit of earthly pleasures, but not to the extent that it really causes damage to the physical plant of the body. So you don't do exercise proper grooming, and you don't drink wine because wine is extra and not a necessity of life. That's a difficult statement. Yeah,
I mean, certainly the idea is that that you should maintain yourself so to appear dignified and but yeah. If you have a big mess of hair that's never been combed and so on, I mean, isn't that
Well, nazir is not about being dignified per se.
Well, whatever it is. I mean, you're not supposed to make yourself, it's Chol Hashem to go around like a slob, right, generally.
Well, you'd be like a Sikh. You put under a turban. I don't know.
Okay.
Oh, no, really?
You could.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel as if all the accounts I've heard is all visible and...
Look at a picture of Rabbi David Cohen. I don't know. I think it's tied up so you can't under a hat or something.
So
it subjugates your evil inclination, but it doesn't destroy your physical existence. So for this, it's simply that your worship of God is strengthened and the glory of God will dwell upon him. It's strange though, because but it's such a small subset of things. Like if another were not allowed to eat this and this and this and this and weren't allowed to, had a limit to sleep, I don't know, but just not drinking wine, he could he could eat 50 hamburgers.
You could get drunk on whiskey or not?
You could get drunk on whiskey. Okay. So it's so. I guess the idea is that if you're going to the point that you are willingly depriving yourself of these things, so it's sort of the message will filter down to other aspects of your existence as well.
It's usher to decide that you're going to be celibate when in fact circumstances are such that you wouldn't be normally.
Correct. Yeah.
Wasn't there a whole famous thing where one of the Israeli, I think it was some relative of the. There's some group of Hasidim where after they had children, they were,
How many?
Huh?
How many?
Children. Well, it's the thing, I don't know, whatever. I mean,
they're,
20. when their wives are no longer, able
look.
To have children. There's so one of these Hasidim, one famous one, actually, a group, whatever it was, who had this whole thing that was encouraged by their Hasidus and the, again, I can't remember exactly, but it's the Chazanish, one of the relatives of Chazanish, or was.
The stipler, you're talking about Ger. You're talking about the Ger Takonis. You're talking about the Ger Takonis. That's different. That's, maybe. I never heard that there was a, after having a certain number of children, you stop, but they were just very, very, placed a lot of limitations that are not against.
The stipler was not happy with this.
The stipler was not happy, yes.
Was their wives on board with this?
Look,
that's insane. I'm sorry. Take it off the table.
Well, you don't know what the restrictions are. I didn't tell you explicitly what the restrictions are. So
the Gadol said it was usher. So
yeah, the stipler. Okay.
Well, the Ger Rebbe didn't say it was usher, and they listened to the Ger Rebbe, not to the stipler. That's very not normative. There were a lot of gedolim. I think Rav Yoshev also signed on a proclamation against the Ger Targonis. Yeah, I'm sure if you look online for Gerrit Hakanis, you can find articles that mention them. Obviously, they're not screaming them from the rooftops. They try to keep them. They try to keep it insular. But yes, so we don't find anywhere in the Torah that, a nazir certainly doesn't have to be celibate. No. Look at Rabbi Gorin's father-in-law. Yeah, so he was married, but so, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, according to the technical halacha,
wife has a chiyuv to give the wife an
honor. Correct.
I guess she can say, oh, I don't want it anymore.
Exactly, yeah. Right. There is a...
Which, of course, without any social pressure whatsoever.
Exactly.
According to halacha, so if a man has fulfilled his obligation to have children already, and the wife willingly consents, so there is nothing... Folks? Technically, the celibacy in such a situation would be allowed. Mm-hmm. Again... That's not a normal marriage, okay? That's unusual that it would be that such a thing would happen. But if you're asking, is there any situation where celibacy is acceptable in halacha? In such a situation, it would technically be permissible.
Up there, with you read certain quote art scroll type books or whatever. This is around before art scroll too. Idealizing these saintly people who got 2 hours of sleep at night and studied all the time and blah blah blah. God did not make people to sleep 2 hours a night. And holding up these kinds of impossible ideals, and this is, Gary, you'll excuse me, Narish Kite, I'm not sorry. This is not a good thing. This is not a good thing to get that kind of stuff out there.
Well, I'm not sure I agree with you. Most people don't aspire to sleep only 2 hours a night, but if you... you see the inspiration of people who did sleep very little, so then if you can push yourself and still function, so you're not going to sleep extra.
Somebody's a great genius in math or physics, and they only get 2 hours of sleep at night, and they're so dedicated, everything's, oh, wow, that's sort of wonderful.
You can't hold that up as an example for everybody.
Well, all right, but I'm saying.
Impressionable kids read this stuff, they get bad ideas, I'm sorry.
Well, also, they don't keep them for very long, though, if they try to.
It's interesting that I was reading in some biography of Rav Avadia Yosef. So it says he used to go to sleep very late at night, because he was learning, and then he would get up early in the morning for Shacharis. But what was the secret? Again, I'm sure overall, there's no doubt that he slept much less than an average person. But it said also in some other, with a line in the book, just in a offhand way, that his wife worked very hard to keep the children quiet during his two-hour afternoon nap.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, so... The point is that he slept for 2 hours in the afternoon, which enabled him to stay up until 2-3 in the morning and then sleep till 6.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. But still, overall, it's less sleep, and he was very dedicated. Chas v'sholem, I'm not minimizing that. But yeah, but there have been great... if nobody knew that such a thing were possible, everybody just slept as much as they wanted, so then there would be no huge Talmidei Chachamim. Rav Yoshev used to go to sleep at 11 p.m. every night and get up at 2. Maybe he had a nap during the day also a little, but he learned for a long time. Okay, so back to the Nazir. Fine. The Haraya, where are we? The Haraya, She'inyin Gidul HaSeyar Hu Kemochein Mipnei Hachnos HaYetzer Kemosh Amarnu. So the idea, not only behind the not drinking wine, but behind the growing of the hair, is also to make you more focused on your intellectual pursuits of God and not give in to the Yetzer Hara. This is a very fascinating story that's found in the Gemara in the beginning of the second parak of Nazir. Amar Reb Shimon HaTzadik. Reb Shimon HaTzadik, who was the Kohen Gadol. Remember the really ancient Kohen Gadol who was greeted Alexander the Great when he came to Yerushalayim. Miyomai lo achalti asham Nazir tomei elapam achas. Even though the Nazir is required to bring in asham, so I never used to eat it. Why? I used to give it to a different Kohen or whatever. I never used to eat it. Why? Because I was concerned. This was, again, not necessarily in adherence with the technical halacha, but because of his personal piety, that he said that most people, by the time they get to the end of their Nazirus, are starting to regret having become a Nazir. Mm-hmm. So he feels that the Korban was not given with a full sincerity, so it went against his personal piety to eat from this Korban. So what was the one exception to this rule where he actually ate the asham of the Nazir? Ba'adam echa lefanai min hadarom. A fellow came to me from the southern part of Eretz Yisrael. Re'isiv yifei einayim v'tov roi. He had nice-looking eyes, and he was good-looking. Ukvutzosav seduros lo taltalim. And he had long hair from being a nazir, but it wasn't like growing wild. They were naturally just arranged themselves into beautiful flowing curls. Amartilo, I said to him, Ma ra'iso lahashchis sarcha zehanoe. Why do you want to cut off this beautiful hair of yours? Amar li, roa ha'isi la'aba bi'iri. I was a shepherd for my father in my city in the south. Be'olachti lemalos mayim in hamayon. And I wanted to water the sheep or to take a drink. And I wanted to fill my bucket from a spring. Benistakalti be'bavua sheli. I saw my reflection in the spring.
Nice.
And I said, hey, that guy is really good looking. He could have any woman he wants, and you know, he could get to any status in life that he wants just by using his physical attractiveness to curry favor with others. Upachas Yitzri alai. I said that to myself, and I said, wait a minute. Uvikesh atardeni min haolam, and the my Yitzri hara wanted to remove me from the world, meaning from Olam Haba. That by being totally focused on physicality, I was going to completely lose sight of my spiritual existence. Amarti lo. As soon as that thought entered his head, he said, "Russia, wicked person, lama ta misgoy ba'olam she'eno shelach, b'mishu asi lios rima v'soleya." Youth are trying to convince me to be focused on my physicality just because I'm so good looking. One day, I'm going to die just like everyone else, and I'm going to turn into dust. And it won't matter how good-looking I am now, my internal existence is more important.
So much for...
Ha'avoda sh'agalechecha la'shamayim. I swear that I will cut you, I will shave you off for the sake of God. Miyad amadi, so now Shimon HaTzadik is talking again. Amadi chimadi v'neshakti val rosho. I got up, and I... Chimadiv means like to appreciate, treasure someone, but I don't know what that means. It's not a particular action. You think it would mean hug. But you think it would mean hug, but that's not a normal word for hug, but whatever. And I kissed him on his head. V'amarti lo b'ni kimosach yirbu nodre naziros. People who have as pure intentions as you should become nazirim. So that one case where there was someone who you think would be focused on his physicality because he was so good looking, and he voluntarily chose to do something that made him look much worse, so you see that his Nazirus vow was very sincere, and in that case, Shimon HaTzadik was willing to eat the korban. So Lecha Kosov Omer, Ish ki afli lindor neder lazir lazir lashem. So that's you. You are what the Torah is talking about when it tells us the concept of an ozer. Yeah.
I really get that, but it could also be that that the nazir is bringing the korban because I really regretted this. I shouldn't have done this. And then he's sort of feeling a little bad.
No, the korban is a requirement. Every nazir has to bring.
No, I know, yeah. I know that. But he's assuming he doesn't want to eat it because the guy may have regretted the whole thing. At the
right,
end.
That was a stringency. That was his personal pious practice that he only wanted to eat the korban of another. That was
but I think
thoroughly sincere.
Be bringing the korban, not just, I mean, obviously because it's a requirement, but in good faith that, you know, I wasn't really up to snuff with this. I wasn't totally with the program the whole time. I got
but that's why he didn't want to eat it. That's exactly the point. Because he
the
only wanted
to... No, my point is that the guy recognizes that he wasn't really up to snuff, and he's sorry about that.
Okay, but still,
okay.
He only wanted to deal with a pure-hearted Nazirim. Okay,
it's
let another Kohen eat the. Ve'al Kain, this fellow, this sense was pure at heart. Ve'al Kain, kidei lahachnia hayetzer gam Kain itztave legaleach kosairo bimlos yemei nizro. L'urushal etaken osam li tol me'am tzas. So at the end of the period of Naziris, you have to cut your hair off completely. So why not just, you know, make it not wild? Why would just cut it nicely? Kidei shelo yoshuv yitzro alav kasher batchila. You want to do something even when your nazirus is over, that indicates that you're bringing the lessons of your nazirus into your daily life even after the nazirus is over. Avon nischayiv megalcha mikol vakol. You have to completely shave it off. Ki ein suffik. There's no doubt. Sheaseyar hagadol biyoser o hagiluach hagomor yafsid toar haadam. So when you're starting off your non-nazir life, you want to do something that indicates that I'm bringing, again, like I said, bringing the lesson in. So I'm doing something just like when I was a Nazir, my hair was too long and I didn't look so good because my hair was way too long. So too, when I'm starting off my life as a non-Nazir, again, that I want to also not look so good by my hair being completely shaven off. So it's interesting because there are people who like to shave their heads and like to have very long hair. Also, it's strange because for women, there's a, you know, societally, very long hair is viewed as better looking. So I hear he's talking about really a man, but a woman could also be a nazir. But if a woman shaves off her head, her hair, so then she looks less attractive. So, okay. So it's interesting that this reasoning, the shaving applies to both men and women, although a lot of men nowadays like to shave their heads completely. So they would agree with they might disagree with this, that the shaving one's head looks less good.
You can't shave the payas, though, right?
You can. It's a seva lo sase.
Wait.
It's a say mevata lo sase. It's a say docha lo sase.
Okay. In other words, normally you can't. I remember something with some, you know, a bunch of friends of some kid who unfortunately has undergoing chemotherapy, lost his hair.
Yeah.
They decided to show that solidarity, they're going to shave their heads. And the Rebbe said, whoops.
So what kind of school was it? If it was a school in Teaneck or something, or Kushner, or
sounds
Frisch,
like, that sounds like
or something
that.
So let them have payas for a few weeks. See how it feels.